Targeting Nursing Fatigue, taking another look at statin effectiveness, getting U.S. girls the HPV vaccine, and we'll take a look at treatment options for opiate addictions with a special segment on buprenorphine management. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show, the podcast for nurses by nurses. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and I'd like to welcome all of you to the show this week and thank you for checking it out. We've got a great show coming up for you. First up in this week's nursing news items, we'll be looking at an American Nurses Association initiative to deal with problems surrounding nurse fatigue on the job. Then we're going to bring up an interview I did on the issues out there for people addicted to opiates when seeking treatment with services and drugs like buprenorphine. Then we'll have that and more and a lot of other things coming up later on in this episode. And of course, all that comes up after the news. Before we get to the news, though, I do want to make sure you follow up on the information you get from this episode, of course, every episode, heading over to nursingshow.com. You can check out the links there in the show notes. There are also other articles and links to other things like the free Nursing Show mobile app. I hope you have it. There's also student nurse tips on there and a whole lot more. So make sure you're following up so you know how what I talk about on the show each week is applied to your own nursing scope of practice. If you want to get back in touch with me, I hope you'll do so. Please drop me an email. You can send those emails in to me here at nursingshow@gmail.com. I love to hear from you, and I will respond back to the emails that come in. So you can send me all sorts of stuff, links to news items you'd like me to cover, ideas for future episodes or interview suggestions. Whatever the case may be, I want you to keep those emails coming. That's it. I'll have some more contact information later on in this episode after the news and the tip segment, but let's go ahead and get on into this week's news items. That's coming right up. First up in the news for nurses this week, let's take a look at a new initiative from the ANA, the American Nurses Association, to combat nursing fatigue in the workplace. This fatigue is known to lead to increased risk for patient care errors and poorer outcomes. The ANA is using rules similar to those used by truck drivers and airline pilots as examples of places where workplace fatigue has been seen to pose safety issues and then dealt with by an industry. So why can't nurses have the same protections for themselves and their patients? ANA President Pam Cipriano said that the policy is intended to focus attention on the issue of patient safety as it relates to nurse fatigue. She said, quote, "If a nurse is fatigued, it is possible that a mistake could be made or someone could forget to pass along an important fact." The proposed rules recommend that hospitals limit nurses to shifts of 12 or fewer hours at a time and work weeks of 40 or fewer hours, reduce consecutive night shifts for nurses on frequently changing schedules, and provide bunkroom facilities to take rest breaks at work or transportation services for nurses that might be too tired to safely drive home. They also want the hospitals to not penalize nurses who refuse to work due to fatigue when called in on short notice. The ANA has made the proposed rules and recommendations multi-sided, though. They say that nurses have the responsibility to plan appropriately in their time off so that they allow for enough time to sleep and rest and arrive at work ready to care for patients. The thought I have is whether hospitals that are having trouble filling nursing shifts and positions will adopt these rules or not. It seems to me that it is easier to blame a tired nurse when mistakes happen than it is to pay for more nurses to prevent mistakes. And all too often, the final decision is made by the bottom line. We'll just have to see. Next up in the news for nurses this week, let's take a look at the relative effectiveness of drugs to treat and manage patients when compared to what may be more cost-effective treatments like exercise or wellness programs, lifestyle changes. Researchers in the UK looked at statin drugs taken by nearly 7 million British citizens and paid for by their National Health Service. They found that based on their study, statin drugs account for about 750 lives saved a year. Now that number seems great, right? But when you compare it to programs that provide lifestyle-changing therapies like exercise programs and nutritional education, it's not that great. These therapies account for more than 4,500 prevented deaths each year and probably lead to a population that is overall healthier. According to the authors at the University of Liverpool, more time and energy should be spent by public health officials and nurses on programs that improve the lifestyles and overall health of the entire population. They point to the current practices of physicians to prescribe expensive medications rather than encourage lifestyle changes in their patients as a reason for rising healthcare costs. The new research points to adopting changes to modifiable risk factors that can prevent far more deaths than any pharmaceutical therapy can. And their research of coronary heart disease deaths in the UK from 2000 to 2007 proves it. The lead on these types of lifestyle-changing programs will most likely be taken by nurses in a similar way that nurses lead diabetes education and similar programs. So maybe setting yourself up to provide these services could be a great way to move into a position as a nurse entrepreneur. Keep an eye on research like this that'll change the way healthcare is provided in the coming years as we continue to rely more on evidence-based healthcare like this. Finally, in the nursing news this week, we take a look at another prevention effort that is not being as effective as expected. According to reports from the CDC and other researchers, less than half of American girls who could be receiving the HPV vaccine are getting it. The vaccine, as we know, provides protection against most types of cervical cancers and more than 90% of genital warts. According to recommendations, girls should start receiving the HPV vaccine in a 3-dose series starting at ages 11 to 12. The vaccine is supposed to be given before the child becomes sexually active. According to studies, HPV infection rates go up every year from age 14 to age 24 when young people are most sexually active. And once they are infected, the vaccine is ineffective. The most recent data shows that only about half of the eligible girls in the U.S. are getting the HPV vaccine, and researchers say that more needs to be done to encourage more eligible teens and preteens to get it. This means that, as with other vaccines, healthcare professionals like nurses need to do more to educate and encourage eligible girls and boys to get the HPV vaccine series. There are some excellent resources for teens, parents, and healthcare professionals at the cdc.gov site. Just search HPV vaccine there. I urge you to check out, I'll also have a link to it in the show notes for this episode or in the article that you're reading to follow up on this information and do what needs to be done to get these young patients protected. You know, more than 2.5 million Americans are opioid dependent, and opioid addiction has tripled in the last 10 years. As the nation's fastest growing drug problem, the Obama administration calls opioid addiction an epidemic and a major public health and public safety crisis. But who is suffering may surprise you. The good news is that novel new treatments may help make it easier for people with addictive disorders to go into remission from this potentially deadly problem, because more convenient formulations and improved side effect profiles are now available. Experts hope the options will improve treatment compliance and help patients stay off opioids so they can begin the process of rebuilding their lives. Unfortunately, a survey recently showed that 40% of patients who were seeking medical treatment for their addiction could not find a physician for several weeks or even months. And once they did, there was a waiting list for those physicians of about 58% of respondents, and over 25% reported obtaining treatment without a prescription. I interviewed buprenorphine advocate Tim Lepak and addiction treatment specialist Dr. Richard Soper about management and managing of patients with opiate addictions. Here's that segment. Hi, Tim, Dr. Loper. Thank you for coming on the nursing show today. It's great to have you here. This is a program for nurses and student nurses, so it's a great opportunity to talk about this difficult subject about opiate addiction.
Great. Wonderful. So that's one of the first places to start is talking with individuals that are in the process of being educated as healthcare providers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's so important. And so maybe we can lead off with that point. Why is it so important to reach out to and educate the healthcare professionals about this problem? Because it seems to be continuing to grow despite efforts to begin to combat it.
That's a great question, Jamie. There's several reasons for that. One is under the Affordable Care Act, as federal government mandated now, one of the seven primary areas of health care that has to be provided is for substance abuse. Number two, treatment is available and treatment options are available. Number three, individuals that are being educated, this problem is not going away. The problem is actually continuing to increase in our society. So if you're educated on how to screen, how to assess, how to hopefully refer or link someone to treatment, whatever level of medical professional you are, you hopefully will be able to assist with moving the number that currently is exceeding fatalities in traffic accidents in our country. That number is exceeded by opioid overdose deaths.
Wow, that's pretty significant. Let's start off with the basics. So for some of the nurses out there, maybe need a little bit of a review. We know morphine, we know fentanyl, and some of the other more common opiates. But what other opiates are out there, and what makes them such a problem? Why are they so addictive?
Well, I'll answer part of that and then let Tim answer the second part. It's literally a cat and mouse race to try to keep up with the list of opiates. Pharmaceutical companies are coming up with new and different forms of opiates literally every year, and some of them are being approved by our FDA and DEA each year. So what are the opiates? The list is too long for us to mention right now, but the primary source of opiates is initially from prescriptions. And now that we're starting to address this issue, some of the consequences that we're seeing is when someone is taken off of prescription opiates abruptly, they then unfortunately turn to other options in their local community, which is an epidemic in our country as well, which is cheap, readily available heroin.
And that's a problem in my community, I know, as well as many other communities around. So, Tim, what is it that you are hoping to achieve with your organization in helping people be recognized and get treated for this problem?
Well, you know, we know that now that we have buprenorphine as an effective treatment for opiate addiction, it exists. Doctors can prescribe it. Unfortunately, nurse practitioners and physician assistants cannot prescribe it, although in most states they can prescribe the drugs people get addicted to and die from. But what they can do is they can help place patients in treatment with a physician once they have diagnosed or assessed them. And one way to do that is we created a matching system at our organization called treatmentmatch.org. And what it does is it allows patients to anonymously register to find a doctor any time of the day or night. Emails go out to doctors, and if they have openings, they respond. So for a nurse or any healthcare worker that's trying to place a patient in treatment, it's a good time-conserving way in order to get that person the help they need as fast as possible.
Is it really such a problem finding a physician that's willing to prescribe this medication?
Yeah, it is because we did a survey this summer, and we found that 40% of people who actually sought this treatment took weeks or months in order to find a doctor.
Wow.
And once they did find a doctor, most of them were placed on waiting lists. Now, part of the problem is the federal law limits how many patients a doctor could treat at any one time. Right now, that's 100. They don't do this with any other drug, but they do this with buprenorphine treatment. And what that results in is areas of the country where there is no available treatment within driving distance. And in other parts, other areas, there may be a doctor with an opening without patients to know about it. So that's what we hope that our matching system will help mitigate. We also, so far, we've connected 80,000 patients with the system this way.
Wow, that's impressive. Dr. Soper, you know, well, how does buprenorphine work? Is it similar to something like a Narcan or Naloxone?
Well, it is not. Actually, Narcan or Naloxone blocks, it's an antagonist for the effects and the impacts of opiates. Buprenorphine goes to the same places in the nervous system that the opiates go to. Fortunately, buprenorphine does not have the risk for respiratory depression and overdose deaths that the short-acting opiates do. So buprenorphine is a partial antagonist or acts against, and it's a partial agonist or has the same effects of. And part of the recent release of a new form of buprenorphine delivery system improves on one of the side effects of opiates, which is constipation, that almost anyone taking opiates unfortunately suffers from. So some of the reason that buprenorphine works is because it lasts much longer, it binds to the places in the nervous system much stronger, actually stronger than any opiate, and it allows the cravings to be stabilized, if not removed entirely, and the individuals to return to functional, healthy lifestyle and address the reasons or the life patterns of behavior that most likely caused their initial interest in, curiosity in, or beginning to use opiates.
And is this something that they will have to take for a long period of time, perhaps the rest of their life, or is it a short-term treatment along with other treatments like you described to eventually wean them from their addiction?
That's a great question, Jamie. And it's actually sort of in the middle. It's not something that you need to take for the rest of your life for the majority of patients, but really, opioid dependency is a chronic medical disorder. It's similar to diabetes or high blood pressure. There are individuals that have high blood pressure that will probably have to take medication for it the rest of their lives. There are diabetics that will have to probably take some form of insulin the rest of their lives. There are those in both of those categories that if they make lifestyle changes, if they make dietary changes, exercise changes, they don't need those medications any longer. Similar to buprenorphine, there are patients that most likely might have to take it for a long period of time. Long is a relative word. Insurance companies and many of the payers for treatment in healthcare currently are still in the model that you should be able to go somewhere for a 3-day or a 7-day or a 30-day treatment and you're cured. Well, that doesn't happen for diabetes or high blood pressure. It doesn't happen for opioid dependency. If you allow those structural and biochemical changes to heal in the individual, we're talking more in the term of months rather than days for treatment. If you do allow that treatment for months, there is a significant improvement in stable, sustained abstinence in the range of 80% rather than the 80% relapse that occurs with individuals that are only in treatment for 30 days.
Well, that's good news, at least for people, is that the treatment works and it can be something that they can eventually not have to take. But for those that need to take it, just like any other chronic medication, it's a positive step to provide this resource for them. Tim, where can a nurse or a nurse practitioner or even a nursing student look to find more information about how to recognize their patients with their opioid addiction and help them move to finding the resources they need to help get this access to this medication?
Yeah, thanks for asking, Jamie. They can go to treatmentmatch.org, and at the bottom of the page we have a links to several different resources that can help them evaluate patients and understand buprenorphine treatment and medication-assisted treatment in general, and basically prepare them for some of the questions that they're going to get, like, you know, why isn't this switching one addiction for another, and what is the ultimate purpose of this treatment? And those questions are all answered on the website. And once they're prepared for those objections, I think that they'll be able to help the patients ease into treatment a lot easier.
Great. Well, it's great to have you both here. Any final thoughts for the nurses out there that are listening to this about patients with opiate addiction? Obviously, we need pain management and need these medications to treat patients, but we need to be aware of the side effects and the long-term course of action for them.
Good statement. The final thought in wrap-up that I would say, Jamie, is education and communication. As Tim alluded to, treatmentmatch.org is one website. The Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration, SAMHSA, of the federal government has a website where you can get free, it's called TIPS, T-I-P-S program, free literature to educate on this as well as other substance abuse issues. So I think if we educate our nurses, and in fact there is even an Addiction Medicine Nurses Association, or nurses can become members of the American Society of Addiction Medicine and get information, education, and learn how to communicate and identify early the patients that potentially are at risk or are actually dependent on opiates.
Great. Well, we'll have links to all those pieces of information and sites in the show notes. And I want to thank you both for taking the time to be on The Nursing Show and chat with our audience today.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thanks, Jamie.
That's going to close out this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank all of you for checking out the program this week. Make sure you follow up, though, on all of the information you picked up in this episode. Head over to nursingshow.com and check out the episode show notes. There's a link right there at the top of the page. In there are listings for all of the episodes of The Nursing Show. From the most recent one at the top, you can scroll down and go all the way back to the very first episode. But I want you to get the full information there with links to other resources so that you understand how to apply what you hear on the show to your own nursing practice or studies. If you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email. You can send that in to nursingshow@gmail.com. I respond back to every email that comes in, and I want to hear from you. So send me your comments, your questions, suggestions, news links. Help support the Nursing Show community with your input. You can also get the Nursing Show email newsletter. There's a link and form right on the right-hand side of the Nursing Show site, so fill out that short form, and we'll send you the links to each episode's show notes directly to your email inbox each week. You can also connect with me on social media sites. I'm available there under the handle PodMedic, so you can find me there under twitter.com/PodMedic and facebook.com/PodMedic, so friend or follow me. You can also become a member of the community over on Facebook by liking the Nursing Show Facebook page at facebook.com/nursingshow. Click the like button there and join the conversation on that page. I post other nursing and healthcare articles and pictures on the Nursing Show site throughout the course of each week and over at the Nursing Show page, so check it all out. That's it for me. I'm your host, Jamie Davis. I'll be back with more episodes here of The Nursing Show. Remember, it comes out every Friday for you, so you can wrap up your nursing week. In the meantime, please remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show.